Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody's having a fantastic day, and there's a lot to talk about. The majority of it is okay, but we also have that major looming story that we're going to get to, and of course, I'm referring to the WGA strike, and they were going to strike it really, really soon, or it's going to go on for a long time. So I think it might be the latter. Anyways, let's get started and let's you know, basically have some fun here. And then we'll talk about the strike a little later on. So there's a movie that is going to be coming down, down the line, a few months from now. And the trailer just dropped today. And I got to say, I'm interested. And I'm talking about Gran Turismo. So Gran Turismo, anybody who isn't familiar with it, and I'm sure you guys are in some capacity or another, it's a video game, okay? And that being said, okay, because of video game movies are so in right now, they have decided, so PlayStation has actually tried to adapt this to the big screen. And I think, I mean, from the trailer, and I'll leave the link in the description for you guys, so it looks good. But then again, this is one trailer. It's, you know, it's for a niche crowd. I like racing games. I'm horrible at it. So Coco says it's based off a real story. Yeah, so that was one of the big things about this. It says based on a true story. Now, I've liked NASCAR, but I'm a horrible driver. I don't drive. I've played the games and I have a wheel that I can use. Yeah, nice, nice. I've wanted to invest in one. I don't know. I mean, it would have to, you know, it is definitely an investment. Anyways, so this cast looks halfway decent, okay? David Harbour is actually one of the big names in this. And this is one of the last, you know, based on the game, okay? So this comes to us from The Wrap and Scott Mendelson. And of course, he's a fantastic writer and, you know, he's been on the show here. Go check his writing out at The Wrap. So Gran Turismo dropped their first trailer. Fresh off $1 billion plus the success of the Super Mario movie, the next big deal video game adaptation has dropped its first trailer and poster, as you were just seeing. So once again, here is the poster. Rather than attempt a workable fictional narrative from a series of racing video games, the filmmaker has opted to do a true story connected to the games. The film, penned by Jason Hall and Zach Braylon and helmed by District 11 director Neil Blomkin, is based on the true story of Jan Martinsbrough, played by Archie Merrington in the film, whose video game skills won a series of Nissan competitions and allowed him to get a shot at actually being a race car driver. From gamer to racer, the tagline states, and it's an interesting narrative that would be intriguing even if the IP surrounding it. The trailer lays out the story in a nutshell of a Gran Turismo gamer wanting to turn his passion into an occupation while his parents try to get him to realize that his blue-collar roots offer a different path. David Harbour, as you see on the left there, plays the disbelieving but empathetic trainer. And Orlando Bloom is a mercenary guru loosely based on the TC Academy founder, Darren Cox, who may or may not be a villain. And we get plenty of seemingly practical racing sequences, including one fiery wreck in the usual quote, "You don't get to do it a real do-over in real life warning." They're like a Call of Duty type. Sure, it's not that far off from The Wizard, but that Frank Savage, Christian Slater, Jenny Lewis coming-of-age road trip film, essentially Rain Man for kids, in a feature-length Nintendo commercial, is nearly 34 years old and doesn't have the hook of being a true-life narrative. Produced by Doug Belgrade, Carter Swan, Dana Brunetz, Herman Hulst, Jason Hall, and a few others, Gran Turismo hopes to continue a hot streak of video game movies, one that began in early 2008 with Rampage and Tomb Raider and continued with Pokemon Detective Pikachu and, of course, the two Sonic the Hedgehog movies and the latest being Uncharted. Whether the Seven Games and Counting series has the kind of fan base will reach out to theaters is an open question. But this video game movie will always exist as the kind of low-stakes, grounded, character-focused melodrama that has become a rarer breed in Hollywood as it's tripled down on the mega-budget fantasy action films. Its grim irony counterpart, the Need for Speed film in 2014, has become the kind of film that to inspire a quote, "They don't make them like this anymore," end quote, nostalgia. Columbia and PlayStation Productions, Gran Turismo is based off the 25-year-old PlayStation stock race or car racing game, and it opens on August 11th. I gotta say, on the surface, this looks really good. So this is one of the posters. And here's Coco. After such success with video game movies and shows, we're now getting a lot of video game movies like this movie and the Five Nights at Freddy and the Iron Lung movie. Yeah, I mean, the thing is this, and you're right, we are getting a lot of video game movies. And the thing is that when you have good video game adaptation movies, then people want to copy them. And it's true of any genre, Coco. So whether we're talking about video game movies right now, or we're talking about, you know, musical biopics is another one. If you look back, I've said this before, if you look back like the last, I don't know, 7-8 years, you have all of these musical biopics, whether it's, you know, Rocket Man or Judy or Elvis, you know, A Star Is Born isn't necessarily a biopic, but it is a musical film. It's success. And especially when you're telling, you know, you're telling the story. The thing is, okay, that it's already preconceived. It's already done. So you have the story of the individual. You just need to adapt it to the screen. So you're not having to worry about creating original characters and everything else. And it's the same goes for video games. The story's already there for you. All you've got to do is actually put a pen to paper. So having seen this trailer, okay, I really like this. Now, is it going to blow the roof off and do huge numbers? No, of course not. But I do think, so there's a couple of things here to keep in mind. Number one, this opens, so in the right when you have in August, you have that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle coming out on the 4th, okay, which I think is going to be fine, okay? That's more of a Netflix type of thing. And this opens the 11th. You have Blue Beetle opening up the 18th. So you're going to be getting a lot of that 18 to 34 crowd, especially males, okay, that are playing this game or have played this game or this looks interesting. And I think it's going to do well for it, for what it is. Let's call it what it is. So I like this. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be, you know, you've got recognizable names in there, okay, with David Harbour and Orlando Bloom, and, you know, I'm sure there's a couple of others in there. So you're actually seeing. Then on top of that, you have that story of, you know, I can do anything I want. Couple that with a video game, with, you know, the video game, the younger generations, okay, that 18 to 34 crowd that plays. Now you're getting a lot of movies, you know, a lot of things like this. I think it's going to be a fun movie. You know, it kind of, the trailer a little bit kind of, it's a little different, but it kind of reminded me of Days of Thunder, you know, the race car driving, except it was on a road track. And so, yeah, I will definitely see this. I don't play, you know, racing games a lot, but I will definitely see this. I think this has the potential to do, a good amount of money for it. I would be curious to find out off the top of my head, and I don't know. So let me check out. I want to go to IMDb because I want to see what the budget was of this movie. So it actually doesn't have the budget. Okay, so that's a little interesting. But I'm going to call it $30, $40 million, maybe $50 million. I think it's going to make back in a heartbeat, you know. You've got Damon Hunzus, you know, you've got Orlando Bloom, you've got David Harbour, okay? You know, I think this is going to do really well for the crowd. So, you know, let's just say it's $50 million. Let's just say. I think it's going to either make it back or it's going to get close. And don't forget, guys, you got overseas too. So even if it makes 25 or 30 here, it's probably going to make it back over there. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this? Are you a video game player? Do you like racing games? Do you like Gran Turismo? How many of these games have you played? Did you know the story? And are you going to go see this when it comes out on the 11th of August? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we go from feature films to streaming. So there has been a movie out now for, almost 5 weeks now. And it basically has taken everybody by storm. And no, I'm not talking about Super Mario. I'm talking about its counterpart. The film that came out the same day. And I'm talking about Air. Air is, so anybody who has seen this film knows what I'm referring to. This is, once again, we have a feel-good movie. This is such a cool movie. We all know who Michael Jordan is, okay? We all know who he is. We also know, you know, what Air Jordans are. I think that when you know the story behind how the Air Jordans were made, it's really fascinating to see the story. And that being said, this is what it is. And so the reason I bring this up is because Air, okay, is going to be moving to streaming. And so this comes to us from the Hollywood Reporter, and it says, Amazon reveals streaming date release for Ben Affleck's Air. Ben Affleck's critically acclaimed Air will become available to stream on Amazon Prime Video on May 12th after an exclusive run in theaters across the world. The star-studded period sports drama, which sparked an early Oscar buzz, makes a new era for Amazon Studios in terms of how it's releasing original titles. Instead of sending Air straight to streaming, the studio has agreed to abide by a traditional theatrical window to give the movie a robust run in thousands of theaters. Air will have played exclusively on the big screen for 39 days when it premieres on Prime Video in more than 240 countries and territories worldwide. Written by Alex Convey, Air is led by Matt Damon, Viola Davis, Jason Bateman, Chris Messina, Matthew Mayer, Marlon Wayans, Chris Tucker, and Ben Affleck also stars. Damon portrays former Nike executive Sonny Verasco, while Ben Affleck plays Phil Knight, who of course was the CEO of the company. And it's his story involving Nike's long shot effort to sign rising star basketball player Michael Jordan to a shoe contract in the mid-1980s, an endorsement that seemed impossible, but thanks to the Maverick sneaker salesman, that would become the most significant relationship between an athletic brand and an athlete ever, launching the global multi-billion-dollar contemporary sneaker industry, what we have today. Viola Davis plays Dolores Jordan, his mother. Air's global box office gross to date is $70 million, including $47 million domestically and $31.6 million overseas. The film costs $90 million to produce before marketing. That does not account for the additional tens of millions Amazon paid to take the project off the table. The film is backed by Amazon Studios, Skydance Sports, and Mandalay Pictures. It's also the first project from Affleck and Matt Damon's Artist Equity, in addition to marking the first time Affleck directed a feature film starring his longtime pal Damon. Amazon handed Air's release in North America, while Warner Brothers International is overseas duties and his distribution through MGM. Okay, let's talk about this. I love this movie. It is so much fun. Everything from the 1980s aesthetic, which you'll see in a couple of the pictures, whether it's the hairdo or whether it's the, you know, things in the room, for example, an Apple IIe, which, you know, my parents had back in the 80s, you know, whether it's a Diet Coke, you know, thing, whether it's the 80s commercials on television. It's just amazing. I love this movie. Now, any Oscar buzz? I doubt it. I very much doubt it. I mean, I think it's a cool film, but at the end of the day, I just don't see this getting any. Maybe. But, you know, there's a couple of different things. Maybe it came out too early in the season, you know, whatever else. All that being said, though, this is really great on a number of different levels. Okay. Number one, we have a film that's made to date, $79 million. Okay. And has a $90 million budget. So it is almost made back all of its money. That's incredible. So it's only about $10 million away. And it's probably going to get damn close near to that once it comes out next week. Okay. Or 10 days. That's number one. Number two, this is what the model should be because it is only 45 days. And this is what the biggest problem I have with Netflix is because you have something in a movie like A Glass Onion that they only keep in theaters one day or one week. Okay. And subsequently, what ends up happening is they pull it. And, you know, Netflix, I can't stand Netflix and their model, with all of the other things. But yeah, this is a fantastic movie. I've seen it. I want to see it again. I'll probably buy it when it comes out on streaming. I just loved it, you know, and it makes you wonder. So there's a couple of cool stories behind this. Number one, the last day of filming, okay, Affleck came over to the screenwriter who's on set at the time, and he said, I want to give you full sole credit for writing this film, which basically launched his career. Now, unfortunately, we have the writer's strike, so that kind of put a damper on it. But nonetheless, that's amazing. You're having one of the premier A-list guys say, listen, we want you to have sole credit for it. Unbelievable. Because, Artist Equities, what they're doing is they're giving back, right? Because they remember what it's like back in 96 or 97 when they ended up winning for Good Will Hunting. And so they want to launch other people's careers and they want to have, you know, other people thrive. So that was fantastic to see. I wouldn't be shocked, okay, as we move forward and, you know, depending on how long this lasts, I wouldn't be shocked to see origin story type of things. So we've had Tetris that recently came out. We have BlackBerry that is going to be coming out fairly recent, next month or two. This is another origin story, if you will. I wouldn't be shocked if they really wanted to, Damon's company or, you know, their company could actually move forward on another one and say, hey, look, guys, this was really successful. If this could be definitely a model they could go after. I don't think they want to do that, but, you know, it's something to investigate. The other thing too is when you know the story behind the screenwriter's journey. So of course, Alex, what he did was he ended up writing this during the pandemic. And the big influence for this was the ESPN documentary, The Last Dance. And so when you read this and you see this on screen, you're like, wow, this is really cool. And the other thing too is, the last thing I'll touch upon about this movie that's so cool, Sonny Verasco, okay, basically helped change not only the marketing deals that athletes get, okay, but for the collegiate level too. He was a big, so at the end of the film, okay, and this isn't a spoiler, at the end of the film when they're, you know, the last scene there, it flashes all of the present day or in the last couple of years, things that have been going on, what Phil Knight's doing, you know, Verasco, multitude of other people. He was actually very instrumental in what we have today in calling the NIL, okay? The National Image and Likeness. So college athletes, NCAA athletes, okay, can actually get paid for their likeness. And of course, Ed O'Bannon was, you know, way back in the day when he was with UCLA. He wanted a piece because back many years ago, I'm not going to bore you with the whole story, is EA Sports used to have these games, and they would only be able to put the number on it, okay, for use. So number 13 for UCLA. and they would never put the name because it was a licensing thing. Well, Brasco was very instrumental in helping getting that done. Now you have big name athletes, okay, in college, okay, being able to earn money. And that's a huge thing. So, you know, I mean, and it's true of any sport of them, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whether it's hockey, whether it's lacrosse. And I mean, they're even, you know, you can even go so far right now and find it on, you know, Cameo. If you go to cameo.com right now, where you can actually find athletes doing this. It's fascinating. So anyways, that's Air. I love this movie. I can't wait to own it. I'm probably going to buy a physical copy of it. That's how much I really, really enjoy it. Anyways, guys, what do you think? What do you think about this movie, Air? Did you see it in the theater? How many times have you seen it in the theater if you did? Are you going to go and own or buy Air? Was there any cast member that you really enjoyed more, one over the other? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so as we roll on today's show, so one of the shows that just wrapped up a few months ago and one of the most popular shows was The Last of Us. And by episode 2 or 3, we knew that there was going to be a second season. And anybody who is a avid Last of Us fan, I love the show. I love the games. But anybody who's played the games knows that this is one of the most recognizable, acclaimed, critically acclaimed video games of all time. And all you have to do, and this is just a small portion, okay? Fundamentally compelling, a profound, harrowing sequel, 10 out of 10, masterpiece, one of the most beautiful games this console generation, this game's greatest game of this generation, one of the generation's best games, looks incredible. I mean, over 300 accolades and awards, winning game of the year, sweeping it, you know. So it's always cool when you know that something is coming. And it may be delayed, obviously, because of the strike. And we are going to get to that, I promise, at the end of the show or near the end of the show. This looks unbelievable. And especially when you have the bosses and the writers coming and saying, we're going to do this right. And so this comes from Deadline. Actually, Destiny Jackson, who I follow on Twitter and speak with quite a bit. Congratulations, Destiny. This is an amazing, amazing piece. And I'm really honored and happy to bring this to everybody on the show today. So great job. And I'll also message you on Twitter about it. By the way, guys, she is on Twitter. So if you want to go, you know, say hello and good job with this, go hit her up. So the headline reads, The Last of Us TV bosses, unquote, moving the bar up for season 2. Award-winning writers and directors Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin joined the Deadline FYC, or for your consideration, House event on Friday to discuss their HBO record-breaking drama, The Last of Us. Based on the video game series co-created by Druckmann, the television series takes place 2 decades after modern civilization collapsed from exposure to a deadly mutatable fungus. The story follows a hardened survivor named Joel, played by Pedro Pascal, and we have some big news about him coming up, hired to smuggle Ellie, played by Bella Ramsey, a 14-year-old girl, out of an oppressive quarantine zone in hopes of uncovering the mystery and potentially a cure for humanity behind her immunity. Since the show's January debut, The Last of Us continued to set records for both HBO and HBO Max. For the first 4 weeks, its audience grew consecutively larger, amassing 4.7 million viewers just from its premiere alone, making it the largest same-day debut after House of the Dragon. In gathering a staggering 8.2 million same-day viewers for the season finale, The Last of Us also holds the current title of attaining the largest same-day audience. Not to mention, it has become the most watched show in history on HBO Max in Latin America and Europe. On the red carpet, drunken and reflected on the aftermath of the first season's successful run. "My life has been insane. I don't know how I ended up here," he said. The concept started as a small student project and it turned into a video game, and now it's this incredible television show. "I'm just so grateful to be a part of this journey." Considering the up-and-coming, highly anticipated season two, Drunkman explained the pressures of exceeding fan expectations and trying not to psych himself out too much during the current production. "There was a lot of self-imposed pressure because The Last of Us means so much to me, and the rest of the developers at Naughty Dog. That made the game and went into making sure we got the show right. And I feel like we did," he said. We loved what we made. "We're very proud of it. Fans have responded very positively to it. So for us now, it's important to replicate the process, how Craig and I work, and how we're going to put the show together. There's some learning and things I feel we can make even better going into season two, but the pressure is usually self-imposed more from the outside. So I just want to make sure we end up with the same thing that, again, we're proud of and does justice to the game that came before it." Eason opened up about the duo's approach in season two, boasting that though the pair might stray a bit from the original source material, their overall method would remain the same. "From a process point of view, Neil and I are pretty much in agreement. We're not changing a damn thing," he said. "I mean, our process worked. We worked really well together. We adapted what we wanted to adapt, how we wanted to adapt. We stayed close to the source material. Sometimes we drifted away from the material, but that's the process. But the process worked great. So we're not changing that process at all. We're going to continue to push ourselves in all sorts of ways." The showrunner also emphasized the process of the grueling physicality expected from season's leads and other reoccurring actors. "It's our actors who are going to have to push themselves even more. As they age up, as time has passed, what does that mean to them physically in their bodies," he said. "And how do they move? And how do they fight? And what happens as the world gets more and more physical and dangerous?" Nevertheless, under the pressure of trying to build another harrowing season of television, Mazin mentioned that the team was committed to pushing the boundaries. "We're certainly also going to push the technology that we use forward. We learned so much, particularly in regards to the infected and how to better deliver scenes with them. So we're just going to keep moving the bar up and up and up. That's the kind of call of arms we have." Okay, let's talk about this. I can't wait. These guys have absolutely hit a home run with this series. Look, it's not short to say that this is the first television video game adaptation to be turned into a streaming/television series to knock it out of the park. Hands down. That being said, anybody who's played the second game, as I have and millions of other people have, know what happens. I can't wait. It's one of those things where we're going to be talking about this, and it's going to be interesting too, because of the strike that we're going into, and today's its first day, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But man, oh man, this is going, when we know that production is actually going to get started on this, and it's going to take about a year, and they're not going to rush this either. You know that, because it's one of those things where they know what they did right, and they know what they want to try and improve on. All I can say is I can't wait. I think this is going to, once again, when you have a game, and I go back to this picture again, when you have a game that has this many accolades and this much love behind it, I can't wait to see this. If Bella Ramsey can pull, and I have no doubt, I mean, she was amazing in the first season, because everybody that's played the second game knows how physical it is. If she can pull this off, this will be one of the best performances she's ever put together and will ever put together. Mark my words. 20 years from now, when we're talking about television and movies and streaming, they're going to go back, and video game adaptations in particular, they're going to go back to The Last of Us Part 2. You remember when Bella Ramsey really pulled off The Last of Us Part 2? That's what they're going to be talking about. I can't wait. I can't wait. So whenever this hits and whenever they start production, I'm going to be really excited. We do know one thing, though. and that is they are going to start when this whole thing does begin production. We know that they're going to begin production in Vancouver. So anyways, guys, what do you think about the comments by Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin? Have you played The Last of Us Part 2? Did you watch The Last of Us? Who was your favorite character in that show or the game? Was it Joel? Was it Ellie? Was it anybody else? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so speaking of Mr. Pascal, he is arguably one of the biggest actors in Hollywood right now. Everything this man touches is just gold, whether it's The Mandalorian, even though the season wasn't that good, and I didn't finish the third season, but The Mandalorian, big parts, whether it is The Last of Us, he can go out and do video games. So, and he does it all. He's a great actor. And so this is a, you know, I mean, these are only a couple of roles that he's done. I mean, of course, as I may mention, The Mandalorian. In the Middle is a movie that I thought it was really good in. He had this little small part in it. And that was The Equalizer 2. And of course, we've got The Equalizer Part 3 coming out in September. So, which is one of my top five most anticipated films. But nonetheless, he was really good in that as one of the villains. And then, of course, you have there on the right, Joel, playing The Last of Us. Well, he is not only one of the great actors right now, but he has landed another huge, huge role. And that is in Ridley Scott's sequel, Gladiator Part 2. Now, when you look at everything that is done, Ridley Scott, I got to be honest with you, he puts out a lot of films. Okay, some are good. The last couple have not been that good. Okay. All of that being said, I think that it's one of those things where when you take a look at the cast now that we have in this film, it is pretty remarkable. And I can't wait to see this. I'll be absolutely honest with you. I think that, you know, he's going to, this cast right here is too good not to be good, if that makes sense. I think that this is going to be a really great movie. This is going to be one of those movies that we look back on. So here it comes from Deadline. And so it says, Pedro Pascal joins Ridley Scott's Gladiator sequel with Paramount. Okay. While the second season of HBO's hit, The Last of Us is in the works, its star, Pedro Pascal, looks to have found the project he'll shoot during the hiatus. Well, it'll probably be more than that. And boy, is it a big one. Sources tell Deadline that Pascal is in final negotiations to join the untitled Gladiator sequel for Paramount. He joins Paul Mescal, who will play Lucius, as well as Barry Keoghan, Joseph Quinn. Connie Nielsen is making another appearance 23 years later, and Denzel Washington. Ridley Scott is returning to direct. Pascal's role is unknown. The new film follows the 2000 blockbuster Gladiator, which earned more than $460 million in worldwide box office and was nominated for 12 Oscars, winning 5, including Best Picture. The role of Maximus, the Roman general turned gladiator, was a career changer for Russell Crowe, not only delivering him the Best Actor Oscar, but launching him into the top of every leading man category. Once it's made clear that the sequel would be Scott's next movie, every male actor in town that fits a profile began chasing the part. Scott will likely produce, along with Scott Free president Michael Press, as well as Doug Wick and Lucy Fisher from Red Wagon Entertainment. David Scrapper penned the script. Also returning from the original films are John Matheson, the DP, Arthur Max, the production designer, and Yahtzee Yates, the costume designer. Paramount Pictures has dated the film for a November 22, 2024 release. The first film was a co-production between Universal and DreamWorks. While DreamWorks will not be involved with the sequel, Universal has the right to partner again when the project is packaged. Pascal has a major following since his scene-stealing role in the one season of Game of Thrones, but his star has blasted off following The Last of Us, which has become one of the most popular shows in HBO history. While HBO is looking to get the show up and going next year, Pascal has been weighing a number of options to shoot before jumping back into that. And the opportunity on this film was too hard to pass up. Besides The Last of Us, which will certainly have him in award season chatter this Emmy season, he's also reprised his role on The Mandalorian, which just had its third season finale last week, okay? Pascal can then be seen alongside Ethan Hawke in Pedro Almodóvar's short, Strange Way of Life, which will premiere at Cannes Film Festival and will be distributed by Sony Pictures Classic this fall. Additionally, Pascal is in Ethan Coen's film, Drive Away Dolls, distributed by Focus Films and releasing in September. Pascal also stars in Anna Brody's Freaky Tales, which is likely to come out this year. He's been a busy guy. He also hosted Saturday Night Live earlier this year, earning rave reviews, of course, doing the mock-up of Super Mario, and is in contention for some Emmys Love Awards this season. Pascal is represented by CAA and Kimberly Jamie at Jackaway Austin. Okay, let's talk about this. This man is on an absolute tear right now. I mean, I'm talking a tear of sorts that could just be rivaled by anybody. He is working, and working more. And it's because he loves the job. That all being said, if this cast that what I just made mention of sounds too good to be true, I don't think Scott could screw this up. I really don't. I mean, I think this is a slam dunk. You've got an Academy Award winner and two-time Academy Award winner in Denzel Washington. You have an Academy nominee in Paul Mescal. You have arguably the hottest actor right now in Pedro Pascal. Connie Nielsen is coming back after 23 years. I don't see how they screw this up. This one Best Picture. Now, all that being said, I'll say this much. The expectation is huge. Huge. So it's one of those movies where it's always, well, do they really need a sequel, right? So I think that this is going to be a great movie. And I definitely think this is going to be an Academy Award nominee film in some capacity in the next cycle. When you're bringing people back that worked on the first film, the costume designer, the production designer, the DP, you know you're getting good work. And some of those people were probably, I don't know off the top of my head, were probably Academy Award winners. This is fantastic. This is great news. And we need some really, really, really good news right now. So I think it's going to be good to see. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this news? What do you think about Pedro Pascal joining Gladiator 2? How do you think this is going to play out, you know, when this film comes out? Who are you excited about in the movie? Do you think Ridley Scott can do a good job? Do you think this could actually win Best Picture 23, 24 years later? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we come to the final story of the day, and it's the story that, let's face it, people were really hoping they were going to avoid talking about. And I'm talking about the writer's strike. The writer's strike is now upon us, and it's one of those things where we hoped we wouldn't have to deal with, but we're going to. And this is going to be, I think it's going to be a long, drawn-out fight. And so this is not good for everybody. Nobody wins here, because what ends up happening is you have the writers who want a higher wage, and I'm behind them. Okay, they're only asking for what they deserve, right? Okay, they are the ones, they are the unsung heroes. They are the ones that bring you these great stories, okay? Whether it's, you know, streaming, whether it is, you know, television, whether it is movies, whatever it is. This is going to be, all of the late night shows are going to get affected. So essentially, they're just going to go into reruns for months. And so I want to read this article, and it's a little lengthy, but when I read it, really start to understand. And look, I get this isn't sexy, guys. Okay, this isn't a story that everybody wants to hear about, but it's a necessary story because they drive the industry, okay? These are the people that write the stories so you can cast a Pedro Pascal, or you can cast a Margot Robbie in a certain film, or, you know, whatever, if it's a streaming, whatever it is. These are the people that are the creative juices to this industry. But I want to read this piece to you because it is in its entirety, because it is necessary. And this is day one, by the way. So it says, Hollywood writers defiant, a strike begins. we're not scared, bring it on. Top Hollywood writers took to social media to express defiant support for their first union walkout in 15 years and showed their feelings about studios being unwilling to meet their contract demands. The Writers Guild of America announced the work stoppage will begin Tuesday afternoon. By the way, if you follow, so they're already picketing, they're in everywhere. As I'm doing the show today, they're already picketing. The union also released a list of claim responses from the studios to their proposal, which helped fired up members. The Shield put FX on the map, wrote FX Snowfall's writer-producer Sal Coleros. Mad Men put AMC on the map. House of Cards put Netflix on the map. Writers did that, not some CEO. Know what you get when you put CEOs in creative lanes? You get QB. Now, QB, of course, if anybody who's not familiar with it, it's a whole streaming platform that's not that good. They shut down an entire industry rather than part with less than 3% of their record profits, wrote Jose Grillo Maximus, who wrote Lost. Looks like it's time to cancel my streaming services, wrote David Simon from The Wire. Ask the son of a bitches to explain. That's a direct quote, by the way. Ask the son of a bitches to explain their reply to our proposal to have minimum staffing levels for set coverage and post-production where WGA is performed. Unpaid internships for young writers? Seriously? Free work? That was the counter? And when a reader snarked that the Hollywood writing has gotten lousy, Simon shot back, eat a bag of stale, unsalted somethings, you smug little quip. According to the WGA negotiating committee, the studios are pushing for a, quote, day rate for comedy variety writers, wrote comedian TV writer Sarah Schaefer. Truly horrifying. We won't survive something like that. Absolute nightmare. What we are asking for is more than reasonable. Stay strong, everyone. We are powerful as long as we stand together. It is disappointing that the studios let ego get in the way of their fiduciary duties to their shareholders, wrote David Slack, does that Magnum PI. Instead of a modest increase for the people who make their product, this will cost them billions and they're still going to lose. That's not going to break this union. They're going to wind up giving us what we need, a fair deal. That makes writing for television and movies a sustainable profession. They could have gotten done tonight. Instead, they're going to lose billions and still give us a deal. Writers are asking for less per year than what Fox paid in one defamation suit. Now, said Sal Gentile, the writer for Late Night with Seth Meyers. So what he's referring to is, anybody who's not familiar, Fox News just had to settle a huge, huge defamation suit that cost them $787 million. So they were about to go to court, and then Fox thought better of it, and then they basically said, okay, we'll pay you. All we want is for writing to remain a sustainable career. The studios want to turn this into a gig economy where millionaires can exploit us at will to please shareholders. Studios are trying to undo decades of precedent about how television works and how writers get paid by keeping viewership a secret so they don't have to pay us commensurately with the success of the content we write for them. The same people refusing to pay writers for the content they create for the billion-dollar companies or even health or pension benefits are making, in some cases, $50 million in 1 year. And I'm not talking about like Jeff Bezos. I mean the execs of effing Roku. This is scary, wrote Ashley Nicole Black, who writes for Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. But a future where we accept what companies are trying to do, low-paid freelance writing gigs with no job security, is much scarier. You can't make good art that way. And writers generate too much profit for them to accept, so I'm on strike. I'm disappointed, disgusted by the number of rejected our proposal, refuses the counters I'm seeing to report on the negotiation, wrote Brian Cogman, Game of Thrones and Rings of Power. I naively hoped that we'd be closer on this, even if we did strike. This has been driven home on how important it is for all of us to stand our ground. Is it a more insulting response than proposal than, quote, what if every year we watch you make a PowerPoint of how we disagree, end quote, wrote Aaron Fullerton, who writes for Gossip Girl, about the WGA's claim that the studio rejected a proposal to relegate the use of AI to write or rewrite material. Do studio executives really want to play the, quote, whose job is going to be replaced by AI game anyway, end quote? Mike Royce, writer for One Day at a Time, added the studios are rejecting AI regulations. This is the same stuff they tried to pull 15 years ago when we asked for jurisdiction over the crazy futuristic thing that they said it was too soon to be called, what was called, quote, the internet. Not sure studios are digesting what's happening. If we tear apart the whole play mid-flight, wrote Emily Andres, who wrote for Wired, When I Herb. Let me give you a hint. First class economy, doesn't matter where you're all seating, it all ends the same. The studios truly don't understand how their efforts to kneecap writing professions have radicalized WGA members, wrote Christian Johnson, who writes for Murderville. Do they really think we're afraid of a prolonged strike, that we're going to be begging a return to be devalued and underpaid work? We're not scared anymore. Bring it on. I like my job, Christy Schrackford, last week for the Tonight wrote. I like doing it. I am so sad to strike. But what's sadder is an industry where writers are devalued, money curdles at the top, and creative worth is tied, not to their labor, that owns the company stock price. Major streamers and networks are refused to negotiate so many proposals to all screenwriters amount to an offer of $86 million per year. 48% of that, which are minimums, wrote Aaron Stewart, The Witcher, Blood Origin. Many of the CEOs are paying themselves around $30 million per year. Poker Face co-show writer Nora Zuckerman wrote a thread about the importance of striking to help up-and-coming writers. If we strike, it's so we can keep our careers and so new members can build theirs if we're lucky enough to. WGA members voted last month to go on strike if no deal was reached by the end of contract, and that expired at 11:59 last night. Studio points to the economy downturns, a tightening streaming subscriber market, and ferocious competition as some of the pressures on the industry to rein in costs. And the WGA says studios have used the move to streaming as a way to pay writers less for the same work. While companies' profits remain high and spending on content has grown, writers are falling behind. The Guild said in a statement, the companies have used the transition to streaming to cut writers' pay and separate writers from production, worsening working conditions for all series writers at levels. On television staffs, more writing are working at minimum regardless of experience, often for fewer weeks or in mini rooms, while showrunners are left without a writing staff to complete the season. So while series budgets have soared over the past decade, median writing production pay has fallen. The WGA's negotiations with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, which represents a collective of all of the studios, Amazon, Apple, CBS, Disney, NBC, Netflix, Paramount, Sony, Warner Brothers Discovery. Writers have long relied on residual fees from their work when they air on broadcast and syndication and are seeking a contract structure that takes into account the reality that most content is now watched on stream. Social media has made up a new element to the strike. During the last walkout, which began in 2007 and lasted 100 days, Twitter had only been around for 2 years and Facebook for 4. At the time, it was rather unusual for a Hollywood creative to bypass the press and issue statements direct to the public. Many quotes we gathered by reporters involving scribes of the picket line from the WGA and studio collectives, including press releases. Strike will have a quick impact on late night television and many impact and delay other shows, such as the broadcast fall television seasons. If the standoff drags on, the two sides have yet to come to an agreement and resume negotiations. Okay, I need to talk about this. This is something that is a lot of money. That is a lot of money, Metal. And I'm glad that you're here. So here's the thing. This is going to cripple Hollywood. This is going to cripple Hollywood as we know it. So there have been many tweets that I've looked at. I just started following WGA East and West and saw what there's. A lot of it has to do not only with the pay, okay? Some of the other things too are AI, okay? Mini rooms, as was discussed in the piece. They, you know, there was a story, I didn't do this the other day, but I get emails from all these different trades. The CEO of AMC Theaters, okay, and I understand that, you know, made $45 million, or very close to $45 million in one calendar. Okay, now that's a studio. Okay, that's a movie theater studio or movie theater. Some of these guys, like a David Zaslav, like, you know, all of these other guys are making millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it's one of those things where when you make this kind of money, you have no perspective. So you have somebody making $45 million and you have your, I'm making up numbers, so bear with me. I don't know what the actual figures are, but you have a writer who's making $85,000, $90,000 a year. Okay. What they want, okay, what they need is a fair deal. Okay. And that being said, so I'm going to hold on for just a minute. I actually took a picture of something and I'm going to read you some of the stuff. So bear with me for just a minute. Okay. So this is part of the proposal. Okay. That was, so this has been tweeted out, okay, by a couple of you know, people in the WGA and everything else. So here are a couple of the WGA proposals, okay? And then I'm going to read you what the response to it was. And this is going to tell you how far apart they are. So the WGA proposal, okay, wants a 6% increase, a 5% increase, and a 5% increase of all minimal residual basis, okay? What they're offering, AMPTP, is 4, 3, 2. One-time increase to most residual basis to 2 or 2.5%. Okay, that's a gap. That's a big gap. Okay, so some of the features. Okay, the streaming features. Streaming features with a budget of $12 million or more. Okay, $12 million or more will receive full theatrical terms, including better initial compensation residuals. Okay. What they're offering, excuse me, is made for HBS, okay, VOD programs of 96 minutes with a budget of $40 million, okay, and receive 8% initial compensation, no improvement in residuals, okay? Guaranteed second step, this is from the WGA now, required a second step if hired for a screenplay for less than 250% of the minimum. Their counter rejected our proposal, counteroffered for our meetings to educate creative executives and producers about screenwriters' free work concerns. Weekly pay. Now, this is weekly pay, okay? 50% pay upon commencement and remaining 50% to be paid out weekly over the course of the writing period. So let's say it's 12 weeks. So I'm just going to make something up. Let's say it's $40,000. Okay. What the WGA here is saying, listen, what we want is give us $20,000. Okay. Give the writer $20,000 upfront. And then over the next 10 weeks, they make another, you know, do the math, 20,000 to 10, it's an extra $2,000. So writer applies paid less than 250% of the minimum. Writers above the threshold have the right to opt in weekly pay, and they rejected it. There's two other pages, almost a page and a half here, about episodic television. Okay, you know. So my point is this, guys, they are so far apart. It isn't even funny. And I said this, I don't know, the other day, and you know. But here's what I said. This was either going to be an 11th hour thing, or this is going to go on for a long, long time. So buckle in. Because the last strike was, you know, let's see if I remember. It was only a 3-month period, okay? So the last strike lasted in 2007, it was 100 days. It was 3 months. You got to remember back in 2007, okay? There was no social media. There was nothing. Economy was completely different. This is going to go on for a long time, guys. I have a sneaking suspicion. They're not going to come. If they come to terms by the end of the summer, I will be absolutely shocked. I will. Now, how long will this go on? Nobody knows. Okay. But the writers are wanting relatively normal things. It's a different landscape than it was 15 years ago. So, and you know, this is going to affect productions moving down the road. Now, according to the rap, and I'm not going to read it, but according to the rap, House of the Dragon is going to continue filming its second season, even with the strike going on. So, you know, I don't know how deep in production they are and whatever else. I mean, because at the end of the day, it would cost them more money to stop and then start back up. Okay. So I don't know. I shudder to think what could be, because the thing is this, and I said this before, writers are the backbone of Hollywood. They're not the executives. The talent has some, but they are the backbone, because without the stories, we don't get things in production, which means crew, cast and crew can't do their job, and it means everything else. I really hope it works out for them, for the WGA, and I hope it can come to a resolution very, very soon. So what do you guys think about this? What do you guys think about the strike? You know, how long do you think the strike is going to go on for? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments. Okay, so yeah, I didn't want to end on such a downer note, but it was a major story and I was kind of holding off on it. But this is going to dominate the stories probably for the next few months. I'm not going to be doing a story about it every single day, so just know that. But any major developments as we move forward, this is day one. So any major developments we get moving forward, I'll definitely bring to you guys. So don't forget, we've got a bunch of stuff coming up on the channel. This Friday, we have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 coming out. I'm going to be going to see it on Thursday. And on Thursday, we will be having the next in our Perfect Movie series, and that is Empire Strikes Back. So don't forget that. If you guys want to head on over to Patreon, there's two levels there. One is $5, one is $10. $5 is Mop Mondays. That is going to be, I just did The Departed about 6 months ago with screenwriter Brad Rochefort. And every single month, for $5 a month, you guys are going to be getting a brand new exclusive video. This month, you guys have chosen The Untouchables. So I will be doing The Untouchables and putting that up on there on Patreon. $10 a month gets you both Mob Mondays and Rewatch Wednesdays. And that is films that I've watched, that I've seen, that I haven't seen in a long time. I did Steve Jobs for the first one. Michael Fassbender, Kate Winslet, directed by Danny Boyle. You guys have selected another video, which I will, and I'm going to be sitting down tonight probably and watching these. And that is Training Day. Denzel Washington, speaking of Denzel Washington, won his Academy Award for that in 2001. Ethan Hawke. Yeah, so if you'd like to support me, you know, there's a little join button there. Hit the join button. You know, start. You could be the first member. If you are the first, I'll tell you what. I have a little something for you. If you are the very first member, let me know. And I have a little something special. That being said, yeah. I mean, don't forget, guys, we've got the Mission Impossible Rewatch Series coming up. I've sat down and watched Mission Impossible 2. I've got to actually do the live stream. Yeah, we got so much stuff coming up on the channel. So even if you popped in here for a split second and left, do me a favor, guys. Hit that like and subscribe button, because that helps get these videos out to everybody. And so, yeah. So that's about it for today. So do the three things that you need to do. Be safe. Be careful, especially if you're outside, and have a great rest of the day. I'm David Steele, and you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.